fantasy genre is vast, complex, and has existed for time immemorial. It is a way to escape the drudgery of everyday life, but also a method humanity uses to examine itself in interesting, boundary-shattering ways. We are fascinated with the heights of glory we can rise to, with the depths of depravity in which we sometimes fall. Fantasy gives us an opportunity to reflect on these themes, and let's face it, it's also just plain old fun. Join us weekly on Fridays for the Fantasy in General podcast, where we discuss all things fantasy in general. Thank you so much and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Fantasy in General.
Welcome back to the Fig Pod. And I'm going to keep on talking because Kelsey usually makes it super awkward afterwards.
Thank you, because I just started panicking. This weekend, I thought of something to say, and then it just slipped my mind.
I'll bet it was going to be awesome.
I think it was going to be. I felt good about it. Man,
you've been sick, so it's understandable that you forgot.
Yes, I was very sick.
You just told me before we started recording that you really thought you were going to die.
Yes. Dramatic. I'm not one to be dramatic, but your face. I was waiting for you to say something. No, I haven't been that sick in a long time. What'd you say?
No, I was just gonna say I believe you. Last time you hid your face with a, what do they call them, a filter?
Yeah, I did have a filter on last
on Zoom.
Yeah,
she did not want me to see what she really looked like because she was that sick.
Yeah, it didn't look good at all, and that was like pre-sickness. That was like warming up to the sickness. Well, with that being said, I caught up on nothing this weekend.
Yeah.
I haven't watched much. That's not true. Because when you're sick, you watch TV. I watched some trash TV because I just couldn't even, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing.
I remember one time when my wife and I were really sick. We were sick together. We both had the flu pretty bad, and we both stayed home from work for a few days, and she treated me to a marathon of Jersey Shore.
Oh, wow. I've never watched that before.
I never want to again after that whole debacle. It's good drama, I guess, if you like drama, but I was just thinking, wow, these are just a bunch of really overly tanned, overly gelled haired individuals who have no idea what they're doing in their life.
Well, I mean, it makes you feel better about your life.
That's fair.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah. I guess that's true.
What did I watch? I watched The Handmaid's Tale because I forgot a new season came out.
Did you finish it, the season?
Yeah, absolutely.
Was it good? Was it worth the wait?
It was fine.
You know what I've been watching?
What?
I've been trying to, well, I'm not 4 years into it, but I have to catch up on 4 years of it, is The Crown.
Oh. When did it come out?
The new season came out like a week ago.
Oh, that's why we didn't. Okay. Yes. That is a good show.
You know what? It is.
I haven't watched it,
but I've watched
it. That's right up your alley.
Right? I know. But I've watched the first 5 episodes now, and I'm pretty hooked. It's really good.
And it's weird because it's so slow, but it's intriguing, you know?
Yes.
It is. It's slow, though.
I recently watched, and this sounds super lame for anybody who hasn't watched it, but I recently watched the episode in season one where there's the great fog in London.
Oh, yeah.
And you hear, oh, it's the great fog. Oh, super exciting television. But it's crazy. Actually really good.
But it was like, that was crazy.
They estimate now almost 12,000 people died.
That's insane.
It is insane.
Because it was really smog, right?
Yeah, well, the fog came in and there was so much pollution in the city that, yeah, the fog trapped the pollution in, toxic chemicals. And so hospitals were full to the brim and people were dying like crazy. And it was so dense, there was only about like 3 feet of visibility in front of you. So people would walk out into the street and get run over by trolley cars and all kinds of stuff.
That's so bad.
Which I can't believe they didn't stop the trolley cars and the trains, right?
I mean, you would think, but you know.
I know this isn't fantasy, but it's still a pretty interesting story.
No, I mean, if you haven't watched The Crown, it's really interesting. And
really
that,
well
and
acted.
Then another episode that I remember distinctly, just the saddest thing ever was when the mines collapsed or like landslides in, where was it?
I haven't seen that yet.
But no, I think that's probably like season 3 or 4, maybe. Hmm. Yeah.
Oh, is it the younger? Is it the younger queen, Claire Foy, or is it one of the middle-aged ones or older ones?
I think it's older.
Okay.
Yeah.
They pick real. Like I must say, they have really good acting in this series.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And the dialogue, I think it's pretty well written too.
Yeah, it's good. It's super good. Oh, you know what? You know what show we tried to watch?
Hmm.
We tried to watch Blockbuster.
Oh, I was interested in that, but haven't watched it yet. Not good?
No.
Oh, that's a disappointment.
There's nothing that chaps my hide more than a show that is supposed to be a comedy where they are just trying way too hard to be funny. And it's just not. And then it just makes me mad, you know?
That's a bummer. I was really hoping it was going to be a witty comedy.
No, it's not.
The girl from one of the actresses from Brooklyn Nine-Nine is in it. So I was excited to watch it, but apparently I shouldn't be.
See, I didn't super like Brooklyn Nine-Nine either, though.
What?
But I also only gave it one episode. I also only gave Blockbuster one episode.
Well, here's the thing.
You know me and first impressions.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the pilot is supposed to be good enough to hook you.
Exactly.
And if it's not, then that's a little bit on them, right?
Like, not only did it not hook me, but it made me mad, you know?
Oh, well then, yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, so.
You and I generally have the same taste.
Not in comedy.
Well, we both
don't
really
like The Office. That is the funniest show on television.
You keep spitting that propaganda. I do like The Office. It is a very funny show. It's just not my favorite. But this is what I go back. This is what I go back to with us in comedy. We both love Monty Python.
Yes.
And I feel like that's like end of sentence. Period.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, The Office is what I don't like. What I get uncomfortable. I've always been this way. I don't know why. Because I love comedy. I love watching stand-up comedians and I love good comedy shows and films. This is why I've never been a big Ben Stiller fan, is I hate it when there is so much cringe happening. I feel so uncomfortable. And I love The Office, but some of the situations Michael Scott gets himself into, I just so awful. Oh, Scott's Tots. Oh, that episode kills me.
Well, all this to say, we haven't watched anything relevant. You know,
The Office is always relevant.
Yeah.
And so is Monty Python.
Exactly. Well, okay, fair enough. So and is the Jersey Brown. Shore.
Oh, Jersey Shore.
You know what, though? I do need a recommendation. So, as you are well aware, in T-minus, well, I'm pushing for, let's see, 24, 24. I'm pushing for 30 hours. We're okay. going to be driving to you. Okay.
Yes.
My husband says 32 hours. We'll see who wins. I don't know. But
okay.
We're thinking about listening to an audiobook, maybe, or a podcast on the way. You know, like we have pretty similar interests. We're married. We have very similar interests, sure. But I don't know. What do you think?
Well,
it's got to hook me in fast, or else I'm asleep in the passenger seat.
Important question.
Yeah.
Is it likely that children will be asleep or awake?
They have their headphones.
So,
yeah.
When it comes, okay. I've been trying to sell you on this for a while now, and I don't think you've listened to it yet. Old Gods of Appalachia.
Oh, okay.
There are 3 seasons out now of Old Gods of Appalachia. Each episode is around 30-ish minutes. So it probably averages about 30 minutes. Some episodes are like 25, some are like 35. So probably averages around 30 minutes an episode. It is a horror anthology podcast.
Oh, I see. That's right.
And I think it's really, really well done.
Well, here's the problem. Okay.
Okay.
If it's not good, we turn around.
I think it's great. Oh, whoa. if you turn around, we're done. Like, I'm upset. I haven't seen you in months, so
I know.
You better come here no matter what.
I know, which reminds me real quick, we will be recording together next week, you guys. So
yes.
Yeah, we're excited.
It's a very exciting. Well, it won't be live, but we'll be live in person together.
Yes.
Recording.
Yeah. We'll plan a great episode.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, they all are great, but sorry, continue. Old Gods of Appalachia.
I think it's really well done. There's great music. The writing is fantastic. It's narrated by a guy named Steve Schell, who is from Appalachia. He's from Virginia.
Okay.
And I think he does a great, great job. And there's other voice actors, too, occasionally in some episodes for different characters. the reason I asked about kids is because it's not a – because we're a family-friendly podcast, and we both appreciate family-friendly things.
Absolutely.
It's not a dirty podcast by any stretch of the imagination, but occasionally there are adult languages. There is adult language.
Okay.
And occasionally there are themes that are not dirty, again, like I said, but maybe a little bit too
more mature than needed.
It's a little bit too frightening, perhaps, for kids your age.
Okay.
Your kids. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So, that's why I was asking. But
we'll see what he thinks.
Really good. I think it's really, really good.
Okay.
Other than that, if you guys aren't into Old Gods of Appalachia, which I'll judge you a little bit when you get here,
that's fine.
If you're not into it, I don't know. There's tons of Star Wars books that are available on Audible.
That's true too. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're good too. So
lots of options. All right.
Options? Are you from Baston?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into our new segment.
All right.
You ready?
Let's do it.
All right. Here we go. All right. And welcome back to Mad Mashups.
Yeah.
All right, so Bobby picks the character. I pick the setting. We say it on three, and then we have to talk about what's going to happen.
Do you say it at the same time?
Well, that would be confusing, huh? Okay, you say
I'll say
it
the character, and I'll say character, and then immediately afterward, you have to say the setting. You can't pause to think.
Okay.
You've already got it in mind, right?
I do. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got my character. I got my character in mind. I'll say it. Boom. And then you go setting.
All right. Ready?
Okay. I'll count down. Ready?
Okay.
3, 2, 1. Aslan.
Fangorn Forest.
Oh. Okay.
Okay.
A little interesting.
Okay.
I thought you were going to say something like the Millennium Falcon. Aslan on the Millennium Falcon.
Well, you know, gut instinct, I think that he would fare pretty well.
I mean, seems like his natural setting.
It does.
And he's basically, you know, God.
Millennium.
So Aslan, I'm thinking, is hanging out with Treebeard.
Well, how do you think they would get along?
I think that a being as wise and as aged as Treebeard would recognize somebody like Aslan and realize, wow, really powerful and important figure. Sorry, we're recording and I'm on my phone and my phone keeps falling down. I don't know. I think they'd have some really good conversations. And I think Treebeard would find somebody that perhaps has more experience than him.
Oh, okay.
And I think that the Battle of Isengard would go even more wrong for Saruman.
Yes.
Because when the Ents march, Aslan, I think, would go and support his friend Treebeard and the other Ents. And he'd do some orc and white wizard smashing pretty hard.
White wizard smashing. Well, how do you think he would... I mean, this is a tough one because, like you said, Aslan's pretty much God, okay?
Yeah.
How would he fare against the orcs?
Like, is this a trick question?
Well, I mean, orcs against him, you know?
Oh, he'd destroy them.
Okay.
Like, left and right. Like, I'm thinking, darn, I'm blanking on his name. The, from The Hobbit, he can transform into a bear.
Oh, Beorn.
Beorn, thank you. It's Beorn on steroids.
That's true. Just Beorn, tossing him.
Yeah, Beorn just owns orcs, grabs them and throws them and smashes them, and Aslan's like that times 10.
Yeah. Oh, man. Beorn in the Millennium Falcon.
That's okay. So you and I both have our... Oh, Beorn on the Millennium Falcon would be him and Han Solo going back and forth would be some entertainment. But you and I both have our issues with the Hobbit films. I enjoy them for the most part. I think you do too.
I enjoy them for entertainment, yes.
Yes. You have more issue with it than I do because you are a massive Hobbit fan.
Yes.
I am too, but The Hobbit has always been your thing. But I do really like it in the movies when they drop Beorn in and he turns into the bear and just starts rocking some goblins.
Oh, I mean, absolutely.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, they did. What they did with the Battle of Five Armies was great.
Yeah.
Because really, you know, in the book, you don't see it.
Right.
You have no idea what happens.
Yeah, so, that's true.
Yeah, so they really filled in the blanks. But
yeah, I think Aslan would be that and then some.
Yeah.
So it'd be Aslan would rock some Middle Earth stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's a character that could, you know, fare well in Middle Earth.
So Fangorn was really your choice? Like, yeah. That was it?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Because I feel like, yeah, because, yeah, the first, when you said, okay, you come up with the character, I'll come up with the setting. Okay, first character came to my mind, Aslan, because I love Chronicles of Narnia.
Yeah.
And that's just, I don't know. I may be sounding lame right now, but it's interesting because that's, I don't know if there's a more perfect, as out of place as Harry Potter was with Reavers in outer space.
That guy had no chance.
Yeah. As I feel like there's no better setting for, if it's not Narnia, it's gotta be Fangorn Forest, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's just overgrown Narnia.
Can you imagine sitting and listening? Well, it'd go slow if Treebeard was involved, but Could you imagine sitting down in a conversation between Treebeard, Gandalf, and Aslan?
That would be intense.
That would be a conversation I would want to be a fly on the wall for.
It's a lot of very deep voices.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very gruff.
Yeah.
Very deep. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Merry and Pippin making jokes.
Yeah. How would Aslan fare with Merry and Pippin around?
Aslan seems fairly patient to me.
I mean, he really has a similar demeanor to Gandalf, right? I feel like Gandalf has a little bit more of a sense of humor, maybe.
Yeah.
But
I think both of them don't have a whole lot of, I guess let me say this, they don't suffer fools very well.
No. True.
But when it comes to intelligent, witty conversation, I think they both would appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which maybe Merry and Pippin wouldn't be good examples of intelligent, witty conversation, but...
Well, they are kind of No, I mean... Trying to find a similar character to Radagast, right? No, not Radagast. No. What's the rat's name? Not Radagast.
Are you talking about in Chronicles of Narnia?
Yeah.
Oh, Reepicheep.
Reepicheep. There we go. You know, humor wise. I feel. Yeah. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Reepicheep takes himself much more seriously than Merry and Pippin, but
yeah, very true.
Humor wise.
Yes. Yeah, but, I think that'd be good.
Yeah, I mean that was a good mad mashup, really.
It was. It's a good contrast to last week where the character would not do well.
No, yeah. No, no death here.
No, Aslan's, yeah, not going to die. And in fact, I think he would excel.
Yeah, he'd be like, sure, this is perfect. No problem.
I can just picture a pack of wargs descending upon some unsuspecting prey. And then Aslan shows up and they run away whimpering into the woods.
Yeah.
And then the trees take out the wargs.
Yeah, I mean it's a great combo.
I think another interesting element to that would be because he seems very wise.
Yeah,
would be the King of the Eagles.
Oh, dang! They would be besties.
Having a conversation with Aslan, I think that would be very interesting.
They would be homies for sure.
Yeah.
They would love that.
Agreed. That's cool. I like it.
Aslan and the Eagles.
We need some fan fiction.
Yeah. Just
that
them
has Aslan and Fangorn.
Yeah. Get at it, everybody.
Just like a 100-page conversation between Aslan and the King of the Eagles.
Yeah. That would be cool. And then I could see, like, you know, the King of the Eagles picking up Aslan and kind of, like, they're just kind of a team now. And
you think
then,
he picked him up?
Well, I mean, if Aslan wants to go somewhere quick, I think. And then if the King of Eagles wants to take a little nap but still wants to travel, he'd sit on his back and while Aslan runs. I think that they would be best friends.
I think they would be very good friends. The only problem I see with that is I just think of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe when the Pevensey siblings, it's either Susan or Lucy, I think, that asks, is Aslan a tame lion? And Mr. Beaver goes, tame? Heavens, no. But he's good.
But that's the exact same as, like, you could change in King of Eagles to that as well.
Yeah,
and so if you're on the same level, you guys can just level up with each other and chill.
Maybe they're like friends that don't need each other.
Exactly.
But they appreciate.
Yeah, that's
yeah, but they appreciate each other. Yeah. That's the best kind of friendship.
Yes.
Are you saying you don't need me? Wow.
I think it's better when you like want to be around somebody.
Oh, agreed. Well, yeah. Obviously, yeah.
I don't need anybody.
Hopefully, with the exception of your husband and children.
Yes, yeah.
But I get what you're saying, I think.
No, I'm just kidding. I need a lot of people. Very, very helpless over here. So
you are not helpless.
Need everybody here. But
you're dumb.
All that to say, yeah, I mean, that's the friendship of the year.
Man, I think that we accidentally stumbled upon a great fan fiction topic.
We did. You know, when you said Aslan and I said Fangorn Forest, I thought, wow, this is going to be boring because he's fine. And this really became an interesting. I mean, is this a new dynamic duo? Is my question.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is, number one, you're correct. He's fine. Aslan's going to be just fine.
Yeah.
Number two, yeah, like that creates a really interesting dynamic that I had never thought of before, but Mad Mashups has given it to us.
Yeah. Thank goodness for Mad Mashups. Gosh.
Agreed.
Love that. I love this for us.
When you... Okay, so I think we both know when you picture Aslan speak, what we think of. It's a deep, resonating voice. You know, Liam Neeson.
Kind of Liam Neeson,
When you picture the King of the Eagles speak, what do you think of?
Oh.
Because I don't know 100%. I feel like maybe, like my instinct is
I
to
have
think,
somebody.
My instinct is to think it's a deep voice, but then I'm like, no, it's an eagle. Eagles don't have deep voices. So, okay, what's your thought?
Morgan Freeman.
I mean, I feel like that's not fair because you can't go wrong with Morgan
Freeman.
Yeah,
I know. Okay, let me try to think of somebody else.
But no, that's a great... Can you imagine Liam Neeson and Morgan Freeman conversing? That's great.
Chilling. Just chilling.
Oh, gosh.
Because, you know, you have good actors and then you have good voice actors, and that's way different. Way different.
100%. I just don't think of a king of, like, I know eagles have a high-pitched scream.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine the king of the eagles of Middle Earth with a high-pitched voice.
No.
Because he's giant and he's regal. It's got to have a more, you know what I mean? It's got to be a deeper, more resonant voice. So maybe Morgan Freeman's a really good choice.
I mean, it would be classic.
You can't get much better when it comes to voices between Liam Neeson and Morgan Freeman, except maybe James Earl Jones.
That's too deep, though.
Too deep? Okay. That's Mufasa.
Yeah.
And Vader.
Oh, I'm not mad about it, though.
I'm not mad about it. I'm okay with Liam and Morgan. I think that's a good combo.
I'm curious if Morgan, his voice is too kind sounding. You know what I mean?
Ooh.
Say it.
What about, have you seen Breaking Bad?
Yeah.
The guy who owns the restaurant.
I have his face in my head.
Giancarlo. Is it Giancarlo something?
Gian?
G-I-A-N. Or sorry, G-I-A-N. He also does the voice of the wolf.
Esposito? Oh, yeah.
Esposito. He also does the voice of the wolf in Jungle Book.
Let me listen. Hold on.
During Walmart's Black Friday deals for days, every Monday...
I don't want... Okay, well, I'll have to listen to it during the break, and then we'll touch back on that quickly.
I think he could be a good choice.
That might be. Okay. We came up with... I mean, this is great material. If anybody's looking for some writing to do, there you go.
This was randomly decided, like legitimately. Kelsey and I are being 100% honest.
Yes. Yeah.
I independently thought of a character. She independently thought of a setting.
Yeah.
And I think we both thought initially it would be boring, but this is turning to at least a 10-minute conversation.
Yeah. And I mean, it could go on for a while, but we don't have the time.
Right.
But yeah. Okay. Well, I love this. I love this. So yes. You're welcome, everybody. Let's hear your fanfic. Email us all of it. The Adventures of Aslan. And he's got to have a name. What's his name?
Marahute.
Marahute. Fair enough. The Adventures of Aslan and Marahute.
Shout out to Rescuers Down Under.
Yep. All right. Well, with that, let's take a quick little break and we'll dive into the
meat
of our episode. All right, and welcome back.
Welcome back. And Kelsey took a listen to Giancarlo Esposito and his voice, and what'd you think?
Absolutely. The role is his.
Okay.
If he so chooses.
Okay.
I know that he's been looking for work, so...
Maybe a little bit. I'm trying to think. Oh, you know who else he is?
Who?
He's in The Mandalorian.
Oh, he is.
He's the bad guy.
Yeah, he is. Oh my gosh. I didn't even put that together, though.
I just put it together.
I didn't even. Okay. Whoa.
He's like royalty.
He's like always a bad guy, though. So we're giving him a massive chance here.
He is frequently a bad guy. He's a good bad guy.
We're giving him a chance, and I hope that he takes this olive branch, you know, to just be a friend.
Yeah.
to the God Lion.
Be good, Giancarlo. Be good.
Be good. We're begging you. Okay, well, anyway, so with that, let's dive into our series, Baddies, Characters We Love to Hate.
Absolutely.
So we have a classic baddie here.
Yes.
And this was one that I believe you argued, correct, in our very first 10 tough questions? Was she your argument?
I remember talking about her, but what was the argument about?
Like, who's the most evil character in Harry Potter?
Oh, yeah. Didn't I choose her?
Yeah, I think you did.
And you chose...
I chose Umbridge because she's the worst.
So it's not Umbridge.
It's not Umbridge. Yeah. I'm sure we'll do her on a later date.
Which, by the way, in the newest season of The Crown, she plays Queen Elizabeth.
Wait, like that just came out?
That just came out as the actress who plays Umbridge. Are you having a crisis?
That's a stretch. That's going to be really tough. Didn't they think that was going to be really hard for a lot of people?
She's a really good actress.
I know. She really is. I know that she's a very, very esteemed actress. Yeah. But.
Yeah.
Whew. They didn't think that through.
Can't think of her name, poor soul. But she's a really good
actress.
I know.
Actress. And I know that if you say it.
Yeah. Same.
Let's see.
Kelsey's getting her goo gone.
I am. Imelda Staunton. Yep. Okay. Yep. Poor lady.
Very, very good. Very talented actress.
That is one person that if I saw her on the street, I would probably like recoil, you know?
Because of Dolores Umbridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I would. Okay. Well, anyway, this isn't about her and she made it about her. Classic.
Yeah. What a jerk.
Who's it about?
It is about probably the other logical female villain that you would think of in Harry Potter. Yeah. Bellatrix Lestrange.
Yes. Bellatrix. So sources, harrypotter.fandom.com, our brains, books, movies, brains, obviously. Brains.
Yeah.
Mostly. And you know, the interesting thing about Bellatrix is we get much more Bellatrix in the movie than in the book.
Yeah.
You know, in the book, she's not as prominent, I would say, as a character. Would you agree?
I would agree. I mean, part of that may come down to who played her in the films, Helena Bonham Carter, who is an outstanding actress. And yeah, just does a great job.
But I feel like maybe the medium as well, because I don't feel like Helena Bonham Carter did anything different than how she was written in the book. But that visibility, I think, lent to a more imposing character, I guess. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I can agree with that. We may get to this later in the episode. Not 100% sure. I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit more. But when it comes to Harry Potter, they did an exceptional job casting the different roles.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the great jobs they did. Sorry, I'm getting spoken to by Himes in the background here.
Oh, Himes. Did she want to pipe in?
What are you guys speaking about?
We're talking about Bellatrix Lestrange.
Well, first of all, tell her. Hold on. I want Himes, you know, perspective on our new best friends.
Oh, yeah.
in the fantasy world.
So have you, do you know about our new segment?
Oh, how sweet. You guys can't see this, but, you know, Bobby and his wife, well, no, their dog just had puppies. I was about to say they just had puppies, but they didn't.
Yuck. No.
Yes. So their dog just had puppies and Himes
they're
is
all coming
now.
In.
Oh, there she is showing them all to us. Oh, here they all are.
Great. On my bed.
One of them's gonna fall off.
If anybody is in the market for a puppy.
Yes. If anybody wants golden doodle puppies, reach out to thefigpod@gmail.com.
Please do. Please
do. Oh, not on my computer. Okay.
They will be available for Christmas.
What about Bellatrix?
No.
Bellatrix has a more prominent role in the films than the books. And
yes.
Go ahead, Kelsey.
Thank goodness.
I was just saying that, you know, I think that Helena Bonham Carter didn't do anything. She didn't take many liberties outside of the book. I think just the medium of her being, you know, visible in a movie kind of lent itself more to the character than maybe pen to paper.
I think that all Helena Bonham Carter had to do was be herself to be Bellatrix. And
I mean,
so
fair enough.
Queen.
Yeah.
Hashtag queen.
I guess bottom line is just well done, you know.
Like, was she acting? I don't know.
I don't know. Who knows? And that's the hot take from Himes.
Hot take from Himes.
Hot
take
from
Himes.
Maybe. We didn't talk to her about
our the new besties,
but that's okay. So what I was going to say is, you know, the Harry Potter films, before I got distracted by puppies and Himes.
Oh, they're so cute, you guys. Seriously, if you want a puppy, email.
Right in.
Yeah.
So I've got Mama Dog in here right now wanting attention. So what I was going to say is the Harry Potter films are extremely well cast. They do a phenomenal job. I know that one of your main gripes is that the characters tend to be a little old, like the actors and actresses tend to be older than the characters would be.
Yeah.
However, they're exceptionally talented actors and actresses.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the talent makes that not matter. But.
Yeah. And I think Helena Bonham Carter. What? Okay.
No. That just if I had to say one thing, that's the complaint, but that's.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, I think Helena Bonham Carter is, again, an exception, that she is perhaps a little bit older than Bellatrix should be, but she just does such a great job.
No, she does.
I don't want to say she's a one-trick pony, because I don't think she is. She's been in a lot of varied roles, but she exceptionally well does menacing and terrifying, but at the same time, you're kind of drawn to her in a strange way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, speaking of that, and speaking of the Crown, she plays what's her name? Elizabeth's sister,
Margaret.
Yes, she plays Margaret in, I think, maybe season 3 or something. Yeah.
I think that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, no, I agree. I mean, she dominates the screen as Bellatrix. Absolutely.
She really does. I think you're really drawn to her. And there's sometimes where she and Alan Rickman are on screen together. Alan Rickman, obviously, is Snape. And Alan Rickman is, I think, he's like a force of nature. He's amazing. But she, to me, when they're on screen together, she's right up there with him. I'm just kind of like, you can't, and it's very limited the times they're on screen together in the films, but when they are, it's really hard to take your eyes away because they're both so amazing.
Agreed. Okay, well, let's launch into it. So what's her background? What do we know about her growing up and everything?
So as we know, the Harry Potter series takes place in the 1990s for the most part. Mm-hmm. So Bellatrix is obviously an adult in the Harry Potter series, and she was born in 1951.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So she's in her 40s then.
Yeah, which makes her a little older, right, than some of the other major adult characters like James and Lily Potter and Sirius and Severus, right?
So probably more Weasley's age.
Mm, perhaps, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, okay. And then she is the eldest daughter of Cygnus and Druella Black.
Mm-hmm.
Great names. If you're looking for names, look no further.
Yes.
And then she is the, so her sister, so she's the eldest daughter. Her sisters are, of course, Andromeda and Narcissa. And of course, they disown Andromeda when she marries Ted Tonks, right? Ted? Yes.
I think that's right.
Yes. A muggle. Obviously. And then Narcissa, obviously Malfoy.
Marries Lucius.
Yep. And she is also the cousin to Regulus and Sirius Black.
Yes.
So, you know, as we find with the pureblood families, you know, everybody's kind of a little bit related.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the royal family.
Yeah.
Talking about the crown.
Yeah.
Lots of intermarriage and that sort of thing. But yeah, they're wanting to maintain their pure blood status. And as a member of the Black family, she's pretty prestigious.
Yes. Yeah. They're very wealthy. That's for sure. Wealthy, pure blood, proud of it. Done.
Like scary proud of it.
Yes, too much. Like, you didn't do anything to deserve that or, like, to work for that. Relax, right. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. But that's really, you know, all that we know about her early life. Kind of just when she was born, I guess.
Yeah, we don't know a whole lot about her other than that she is a pureblood fanatic.
Yeah. Yeah.
As we'll talk about here in just a few minutes and how that translates into her adult life. But not a whole lot of other information known about her.
Yeah. When she went to Hogwarts, still, you know, not a ton. We obviously know she was sorted into Slytherin House.
Mm-hmm.
But then it, really her post-Hogwarts life is when we really get to know her more.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
So what happens to her after Hogwarts?
Well, she marries and her husband's name is Rodolphus Lestrange, hence her new surname.
Mm-hmm.
And Rodolphus was also pure blood. He was also wealthy, came from a prestigious, wealthy family, and also a Slytherin.
No surprises here.
No, not at all.
No. Nope.
And we know that the two of them never really openly, in public, displayed affection toward one another.
Yeah.
They never really mention each other. Obviously, we don't hear from Rodolphus, but Bellatrix talks a lot about different parts of her past, and Rodolphus is never one of those subjects.
No. Yeah. It's kind of like if it wasn't written down, you would never know.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
And
which is never a good sign for a marriage, first of all.
Right. Yeah.
Just gonna put that out there.
Exactly. And they never had children.
Yeah.
So this raises the question, do you feel like they had an arranged marriage?
I mean, it seems like, you know, the pure blood families are probably getting smaller and smaller in size.
Yeah.
And so I would think so. I would think so.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The pureblood part of the Harry Potter universe is an interesting one because you have these hardcore fanatics like the Blacks and apparently the Lestranges.
Who and are the really Malfoys.
And the Malfoys. They were very fanatical about it, to the point where there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of affection or love in their relationships. But then you have a family like the Weasleys, which were a pureblood family. And I think you can definitely say that Arthur and Molly were in love with each other.
Yeah.
And there was none of that other garbage attached to it. I don't know. I'm just talking here.
Well, I mean, just classic, you're taking yourself too seriously, you know?
Yes. Uh-huh.
To the point where you're really not enjoying anything else out of life.
Yeah, if that becomes the most important thing in your life, maybe you need to reevaluate your priorities.
Yeah. Like, what if you just loosened up a little bit? Then what?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, obviously, we've seen this in, unfortunately, this type of stuff in our own world.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's just, I don't know, there's just really no point to it, obviously, because some of the most powerful witches and wizards we see in the Harry Potter universe are not purebloods. Hermione exactly. Granger being one of the major examples of that. But anyways, so we don't have to belabor this point, but I just think it's interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, like we talked about, it's not due to anyone's own merit. You just happened to be born into this family.
Exactly.
Congratulations.
Yeah, good job, I guess.
You're actually a terrible person, so nobody cares. Exactly. So, yeah. But that's, yeah, I mean, to really say it all about her marriage, nobody knows about it. And, you know, as we'll see, I don't know. I don't believe it. We'll see. Her marriage didn't seem to matter that much to her.
No, it doesn't really.
If you think it's canon or not. So
in a lot of ways, and we're going to get into this right now, and I'll hand it off to you when we do it here in just a second. But it really seems like for Bellatrix, her life begins when Voldemort comes into the picture.
Yes. Yeah. When will my life begin? Now.
That was beautiful.
You're welcome.
So this brings us to the rise of said Lord Voldemort.
Yes.
And what happens with Bellatrix when this comes to pass?
So both herself and her husband, I mean, they're tag teaming it now. They became Death Eaters. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But she received specific dark arts training from Voldemort.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I guess when it comes to that subject, there's no better teacher.
Oh, absolutely. It's really the best of the best.
Yeah.
But yeah, she definitely, it seems as though from the start caught his eye, and she became very loyal to him. I mean, they were all loyal, but you know, there's something about her that, I don't know, he took an interest in and wanted to, train further.
Yeah. And she becomes very, I don't get the sense there's anything romantic between the two of them, but she is very passionately, and I would say religiously, devoted to him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, it's like, yeah, the relationship between the two of them is like deity and acolyte is what it seems.
Oh, like. And it's definitely not even.
What do you mean?
She's more obsessed with him.
Oh yeah. Oh, she's to Voldemort. I think she's an important pawn, but a pawn nonetheless.
I think that she is the most important to him. I think that we can argue that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. I think that he holds her in maybe the highest regard. What do you think?
The only one that, because he was so good at...
Yeah, I know what you're going to say.
Okay, because he was so good at occlumency and blocking what he was really doing, the only person I would say that for a very long time he held nearer and dearer was Severus Snape.
Yeah.
He trusted Severus probably above everybody.
Yeah. I feel like he probably
used... Because Severus could block his thoughts.
He probably used Bellatrix more because of her blind faith, though.
Yeah, her devotion is unparalleled.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's a zealot.
Yeah. And he knew it.
Yeah.
He knew it. Okay, so first Wizarding War. She fought alongside Voldemort. And, you know, clearly she did. But after his fall, you know, a lot of the Death Eaters were pretty immediately captured. Mm-hmm. But she was in a group that was not.
Yes.
They really avoided capture for a while. She was in a group that didn't believe that Voldemort was dead. And so what did that lead to here?
Well, she avoids capture, like you said, for a long time.
Yeah.
Ultimately, she kidnaps Alice and Frank Longbottom, yeah. Neville's parents. And she is the one who is responsible for their torture.
Yeah.
And ultimately their commitment to really an insane asylum. I'm trying to remember the name of the hospital.
St. Mungo's.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And yeah, she tortures them to the point where they go insane and they never recover. Unfortunately, it's very tragic. That's one of the sadder things.
I was about to say that's probably the saddest story in Harry Potter to me.
Yeah, because Neville and his grandmother, who raises him afterwards after the torture and commitment of his parents, they go and visit his parents at St. Mungo's, and it's just really sad. Like, you just really feel for Neville that this is something that obviously is beyond his control.
Yeah.
And his parents were obviously very brave and courageous. They did not give up. They continued to fight against evil,
mm-hmm.
To the point where it cost them their sanity.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's really one of the more tragic elements of the Harry Potter story. But eventually, thankfully, Bellatrix was captured.
Yeah.
And unlike some of the other Death Eaters, you know, they talked about how, you know, they were under the, what's it called? The curse.
Imperious. Where you are.
Imperious curse and things like that. Like the Malfoys talked about that they were under the Imperious curse and others so that they avoided punishment. And Bellatrix, however, did not mince words. She didn't pretend like she was under any kind of enchantment. She proudly stated that she was a follower of Voldemort and she was willing to accept any consequences as a result.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, good for her.
Yeah. I guess.
At least she's honest.
That's one thing you can say about Bellatrix, is she is honest.
Yeah. If she's nothing else, she's honest.
She's evil, but she's honest about her evilness.
Yep.
So she's captured. And what happens to her after that?
So, of course, she goes to Azkaban. She is prisoner 93 in Azkaban, and she is sentenced to life there. No, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And that really took a serious toll on her mental and physical health. And we'll get into, you know, her physical appearance, but definitely wore down her physical appearance greatly, as we see with a lot of characters that spend time in Azkaban.
Yeah, she's obviously always been a zealot, but she becomes, it seems, even more deranged.
Yes.
During her time in Azkaban.
Yeah. Which my question, okay, is do you feel like her time in Azkaban made her more powerful because it made her more dangerous?
I think there's something to that. Yeah, she becomes more, I think she clings more and more to her faith in Voldemort and becomes more detached from reality.
Yeah.
And that does make her, I think, more dangerous.
Okay.
What do you think?
Yeah, I'm wondering if like her, even her spells have more power because of the lack of inhibition that maybe even subconsciously might have been there in the slightest
before. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think you're very right. Yeah. And we do find that she, in the second Wizarding War, obviously, which is the Harry Potter narrative, what we're finding out during the time of the Harry Potter series, she escapes from Azkaban.
Yeah.
And she escapes in 1996. So being born in 1951, that would make her 45 years old at the time of her escape. So she's definitely older than, you know, Sirius and James and Lily, because Sirius is still in his 30s, right, when he escapes from Azkaban.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately, of course, she begins following Voldemort again and pursuing that course. And she ultimately kills Sirius.
Yeah.
Her cousin, her first cousin.
Yeah.
And Sirius, of course. Yeah, I know, right? So, and she's very proud of it. She chants that she killed Sirius Black. And really, she's the one who taught Harry how to use the unforgivable curses.
Yeah, because you can't just say them. That doesn't matter.
No, you gotta mean it.
Which we learned from Mad-Eye Moody, you know, in Goblet of Fire. He said, what did he say? If you all point your wand and say Crucio at me, I might... What did he say?
You'll feel like a tickle.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, so she really was the one that kind of taunted him into practice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because she kills Sirius. And then when Harry's chasing her down, Harry tries to use Crucio against her, right?
Yeah.
And it kind of like makes her stumble, but doesn't do anything other than that.
Yeah.
And she tells him, you got to mean it. Like, mm-hmm. you got to mean it in the depths of your heart that you want to torture this person for it to work. So, which is obviously, you know, Harry's an interesting, he's kind of like a Luke Skywalker figure.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense that, you know, what I've always liked about Return of the Jedi is, sorry, a little bit of a sidebar here.
No, no, good.
But in Return of the Jedi, I think George Lucas does a fantastic job with Luke Skywalker in the sense that Luke is becoming a more powerful Jedi. And you can see that because he's got incredible abilities that we don't see up until that point. But Luke is also he's conflicted. Is he good or is he on the dark side? Because you see him dressed all in black, which is not typical of a Jedi.
Yeah.
And one of the things that always struck me, even as a child watching the Star Wars films, is that when Luke shows up at Jabba the Hutt's lair and he's confronted by the guards, Luke uses force choke.
Yeah.
And takes out the guards with force choke. Yeah. And that is not something that you see a Jedi do typically.
No, uh-uh.
So, but he's also there to save his friends, to save Han, to save Chewie, to ultimately save Leia as well.
And yeah, so like, where's that line? You know, it gets blurred.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Luke is conflicted about that and he's dealing with that. And ultimately, by the end of Return of the Jedi, Luke obviously, I think, chooses the side of good, the side of light. But I think, too, you see that with Harry. Harry's trying to decide, you know, where is the line? You know, we're fighting against evil. These people killed my parents. They've killed, you know, family members and friends of people that I love. They've killed my godfather, Sirius. Yeah. And Harry's trying to figure out how far is he willing to go.
Mm-hmm.
And
where does that take him if he does it? What does that mean for him?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's in that's one of the, I think, an interesting part of that scene in order. This takes place in Order of the Phoenix is what we're talking mm-hmm. about. Dumbledore's army, you know, goes to the Ministry of Magic and yeah. they're trying to find the prophecy and they are accosted by Death Eaters and the Order of the Phoenix shows up to protect them and defend them and fight off the Death Eaters. And in the course of this battle, Sirius is killed by Bellatrix and Harry is obviously infuriated. This is the link to his past, right? This is the closest thing he has to a parent in this world. Even though I think that's a little bit of a dig at Arthur and Molly Weasley, who have basically adopted him.
Yeah.
But Harry's not thinking that way. He's a teenager who's angry, and he chases after Bellatrix and tries to use this unforgivable curse, and it doesn't work, and Bellatrix is basically goading him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you gotta mean it, Harry. You've really gotta mean it. And then Voldemort shows up, and I think Harry's really conflicted at that point. Dumbledore obviously ultimately shows up and fends off Voldemort. And I don't know. I think it's just a really interesting dichotomy between what path is Harry going to choose? Is he going to go down the side of good or the side of bad to handle this situation?
And I also think, you know, these are coming of age novels. And even with Return of the Jedi that, you know, when you're younger, good and evil is very black and white.
Yes.
And I think this moment really shows how easy it is to choose a different course.
Yeah.
You know, and what happened to Harry and what happened to Sirius is big, but just that one event can alter maybe what you were thinking.
Absolutely.
And so I think, you know, that was important to show, and that even, you know, with Star Wars, that there's, I mean, not only is there gray area, but the line between quote unquote good and evil, I mean, it's not that far away from each other. It's at, yeah. They're actually very close.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, totally agree. And I think there's a lot of people that you would classify on the side of good that would justify.
Yeah.
Somehow justify, you know, going a little bit dark mm-hmm. for the great good.
Yeah.
But then you have people who are truly altruistic who would say, no, that's never good. You're sinking to the level of the enemy. Like, you're no better than they are.
Yeah.
And that's what I think Harry's dealing with. And Bellatrix is a big, even though she's a minor character, quote unquote, in the Harry Potter series, she's big in terms of that character development for Harry.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay. So, after the Battle of the Department of Mysteries, obviously Fudge shows up. All the Death Eaters are captured, but Voldemort only saved Bellatrix.
Mm-hmm.
He actually apparated with her.
Yeah.
He chose her.
Which yeah.
means, I mean, I think that shows a lot.
I think it does too. Yeah.
I think it shows that he knows that, for lack of a better word, he needs her.
Yeah. She is his most devoted follower.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know if I used the pronouns correctly there. She is his, yeah, most yeah. devoted follower.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because you think of somebody like Lucius Malfoy, who seems like he's one of Voldemort's chief lieutenants.
Yeah.
But he's not one of the ones
that
he rescues.
No, no. He would sacrifice him, no problem.
Oh, yeah, no problem at all.
And then between... Okay, here's the thing. Between Battle of Department of Mysteries and, you know, future events, I don't know if this is canon or not. It's supposed to be, but apparently Bellatrix mothers Delphine, which is Bellatrix and Voldemort's child. So,
yeah, I don't know if that is canon.
I mean, I say it's not, so we can just glaze right past that.
Okay, let's glaze past it.
Yeah, hate that. Okay, so then, of course, following all that, we have the Battle of Hogwarts, which leads us to Bellatrix's death then.
Yes.
So... she ultimately dies at the hands of Molly Weasley. And, you know, I feel like this death is appropriate. Oh, I mean, the death is appropriate, but her dying at the hands of Molly Weasley, I liked it because... at first you think, oh, it would have been better if maybe she was killed by a Muggleborn or something. But I feel like it's more insulting to be killed by a pureblood wizard who doesn't care.
Yeah, she's a pureblood wizard and she's basically Harry's adopted mother.
Yeah. Oh, so that's she's like true the too.
She's like the antithesis of what Bellatrix is.
That's true. Yeah.
And yeah, so I think it is poetic justice.
Yeah. Anyway, loved that. Loved it.
Mm-hmm. Loved her death.
Loved that. Okay, so let's talk about her personality real quick. What's Bellatrix like?
Well, she's pretty easy to read. She doesn't hide it.
No.
She's sadistic. Obviously, she tortures the long bottoms into insanity.
Yeah.
She's violent. She's willing to torture and kill, which we see her do both things in the Harry Potter series.
Yeah.
She has a quick temper.
Mm-hmm.
Very easily insulted and very, very quick to use harsh methods to dispose of her enemies or those who she deems to be her enemies.
True.
But she's also arrogant.
Yeah.
Which will play in a little bit to one of her other personality traits here.
Yeah.
Here in just a moment.
Yeah.
But some of her quote unquote positive traits, I guess you could talk about. She's very loyal.
Mm-hmm.
She is willing to do anything and everything, including die, to serve Voldemort.
Yes.
So what she deems is right, she's willing to go to the nth degree
mm-hmm.
to achieve. But where her where stuff like her arrogance comes into play, she's prideful.
Yeah.
And that leads into her maybe being a little bit reckless.
Yeah.
As a result. Maybe she overestimates.
Uh-huh.
Either she overestimates her ability or she underestimates the abilities of her opponents.
I think the latter.
Okay.
I think her abilities are right on par with what she thinks.
Okay. Yeah, because that's another thing about her personality is she is extremely talented.
Yeah.
She's a very talented witch, and she's extremely intelligent.
Yeah.
So perhaps, you know, the old axiom, pride cometh before the fall. So she's perhaps does underestimate her opponents. I could see her seeing somebody like Molly Weasley, who she looks at as just like maybe this frumpy housewife. What are you going to do to me? When actually Molly is quite powerful in her own right. And perhaps Molly's love that she has for the people who are near and dear to her, like her children and Harry and Hermione and others, supersedes any talent that Bellatrix believes she has.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed.
So yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
So that's kind of her personality. What do we know about her physical characteristics?
So, you know, before Azkaban, she's described as being very beautiful. She's tall, has long, thick, dark hair. She's said to have a strong jaw and a thin mouth with heavy-lidded eyes and long eyelashes. So really, you know, a very beautiful, formidable woman. And she, of course, has the dark mark on her left inner forearm. However, after Azkaban, post-Azkaban days, you just like we see with Sirius, really, she becomes very gaunt and her face looks almost skull-like. So she kind of looks a lot more sallow, I guess. And she's described as being a ghost of how she once looked. So, you know, there's hints of her beauty, but, you know, it's just not quite there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of, except for the, maybe the height, she's tall. Helena Bonham Carter kind of, that's kind of a description of her in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
She has that strong, she has a very strong jawline, thin mouth. Perhaps heavy-lidded eyes. I mean, I guess makeup and things like that can do that for an actress. But in terms of a lot of the physical appearance, I think they got it spot on with her.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. Okay, so powers and abilities. So we talked about how she is very powerful and very talented. Quote real quick. So she was a witch, as Harry knew, with prodigious skill and no conscience. So, you know, no thank you.
Yeah, not a great combination.
No, no. But she's very powerful, very dangerous. You know, we've said a lot of these things. She's skilled in dueling. One thing that we haven't mentioned yet was she was an Occlumens.
Oh, okay.
Just like Voldemort and Snape as well. So she was skilled in Occlumency. Do you feel, well, we kind of talked about this. So her decline in mental health, do you feel like it led to an incline in her power and magical skills?
I feel like it did in terms of, for sure, like the unforgivable curses.
Yeah, yeah. I guess with certain things.
Yeah, because like that quote mentioned, she was prodigious in skill but had no conscience.
Yeah.
And I think that was exacerbated from her time in Azkaban.
Yeah.
She became more mentally unhinged, had even less of a filter, you know, that normal people would have in terms of morality and things of that sort. And so she was willing to go to any extreme necessary to accomplish what she believed Voldemort's ends were. I think that does enhance her ability to a certain extent, is especially with those types, with that type of magic, and makes her very dangerous.
Absolutely.
What do you think?
No, I definitely agree with all of that. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay, what about her what about her wand?
So her wand was made of walnut wood with a dragon heartstring core.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is a very powerful core.
Yes, very powerful core. Definitely. And it was very unyielding.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it took a practiced and very skilled witch or wizard to wield her wand.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which obviously she could do very well.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was also good with a knife. Ugh. Poor Dobby.
Poor Dobby.
R.I.P.
Gosh.
But yeah, I mean, just very skilled in many, many ways. Unfortunately, not for good.
Yeah, definitely not. Yeah, she was a very devoted person, but she just chose the wrong type of devotion.
Yeah. All right, well, some fun facts. We have a couple fun facts coming at you. So what's the first one about our dear Bellatrix Lestrange?
So originally, even though now we view her as probably perfect casting, mm-hmm. Helena Bonham Carter was not originally slated to play Bellatrix in the films.
Yeah.
It was supposed to go to an actress named Helen McCrory.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, any idea why that didn't happen?
Well, she's Narcissa.
Oh, that's Helen McCrory? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, just right along with what you said, the casting is perfect. She's definitely Narcissa. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
There's no other. Yeah. I couldn't imagine her being Bellatrix.
Yeah, no, I agree. With Helena Bonham Carter, I mean, when I found out Helena Bonham Carter was playing her, I mean, there's just no better choice.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Moving on. Next.
Yes. So our second fun fact is during a 2007 event at Carnegie Hall, transcribed on the Leaky Cauldron, J.K. Rowling said that she always knew Molly would defeat the Dark Witch because she wanted to display Molly's sometimes underappreciated power and highlight the force of her maternal love.
There you go.
Yeah, kind of like what we talked about a little bit earlier.
And I like that. You know, I think that Molly is often thought of as maybe not a powerful witch, but she really, truly is very powerful.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And I think this definitely proves it. So good choice. Definitely a good choice.
Agreed.
Yep.
JK knows what Joanne knows what she's doing.
I guess she does. I guess she does. All right. Well, let's do our rating scale then.
All right. Despicable, redeemable, likable.
Despicable. Scale of 1 to 10.
With despicableness for Bellatrix?
Yeah.
I'm vacillating between two numbers.
9 and 10?
Yeah.
I'm giving it 10.
I think I am too, yeah.
Yeah.
10.
All right, 10. Okay, redeemable qualities.
None.
I know.
Oh.
She does care.
Before I give my score,
okay.
I'm trying to remember, what's the scale again with redeemableness?
Lower, like the more redeemable, the lower the score.
Oh, man. I think, based upon something I just heard Himes mention.
Oh, okay. Hot take from Himes.
I think I'm going to give her a 6.
Oh, whoa. I'm giving her a 9, but I want to know why.
Say that again.
I'm giving her a 9, but
okay.
Why a 6?
The reason I go with 6 is because she's very loyal. And like extremely loyal. And I just think she went down a wrong path. But if she had chosen a different path, she'd be right there with the greats in the Harry Potter series.
Do you think that she's a classic case of nature versus nurture?
Oh, see, I don't give as much credence to that because I look at somebody like Sirius Black, who grew up in exact same situation as Bellatrix, but he chose a completely different path.
Fair enough. All right, likable.
And this is likableness as a villain. We think they're awesome as a villain.
Yeah.
Gosh, she's a 9 for me.
Yeah, same. All right, so 19, so 26.5 overall score. That's a high one. It's a higher score than Ursula.
By a decent margin. Ursula was what, a 21.5?
Yeah, I think 21.5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
So it didn't take us long to top Ursula, but
no, it's okay. She has Ursula has the singing voice, so
yeah, she can sing very well.
Yeah, she has that. She has that. All right. Well, anything else for Bellatrix?
No, I don't think so. I mean, she's obviously a really interesting character.
Yeah.
Which we obviously spend a long time talking about her. So no, I don't think anything else than what we've spoken of so far.
All right. Well, let us know what you think. And you can email us at thefigpod@gmail.com. Don't forget to send in your fanfic for The Adventures of Aslan and King of Eagles. Yeah. Also find us on social media on Instagram at The Fig Pod, and you can become a patron over at patreon.com/TheFigPod.
And please do not forget to rate, review, and subscribe or follow so that you never miss another episode of the Fantasy in General podcast.
See you next week.
See you next week.